The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gildas Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at more than 100 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that many people experience something that we call chemo brain or brain fog following chemotherapy treatments, given the myriad side effects associated with these medications. In spite of the fact that up to 60% of patients undergoing treatment for cancer develop chemo brain to some degree, many patients and their loved ones are caught off guard when these patients experience difficulty concentrating and finding the right words, short-term memory loss, and difficulty multitasking. Chemo brain can have a significant impact on quality of life. Today, we're going to learn all about chemo brain, how it can impact your life, how the brain works, and what treatments can help. We're going to start our conversation today with Sue Harden, who was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2008. And later, we'll be joined by Dr. Fremonta Meyer to give us a little bit more information and medical background. Sue Harden's career as an environmental teacher and science administrator spans 40 years. As a retirement career, she dedicates her time to the issues of environmental justice and the reversal of climate change. Cross-country skiing, birding, and sailing are high on Sue's list of the pleasures of life, and a lifelong passion for nature's biodiversity is her most definitive characteristic. She and her husband, Joe, are residents of Quincy, Massachusetts. Detroit is Sue's hometown, counting the Great Lakes. The couple have lived on each of the four coasts of the U.S. Their two sons have blessed them with four young grandchildren to enjoy. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Thank you very much for having me, and especially thank you for bringing attention to this very important issue.
So thank you, Sue. So let's take a step back in time here. The treatment course that was recommended for you when you were diagnosed with cancer was surgery, followed by two different rounds of chemotherapy, followed by radiation. Just take a moment to tell our listeners when you were diagnosed with cancer, and maybe just start by telling us the first incident of chemo brain that you recall experiencing, and how far were you into treatment when that occurred?
I was diagnosed with breast cancer in August of 2008. Due to some complications of surgery, I did not start the chemo regimen until well into probably October, November. And at that time, I started the chemo, and, you know, there are the usual expectations of hair loss and also nausea, digestive upset, and that sort of thing came about, okay? Yeah. And it wasn't probably until around the holidays, right after New Year's, when I was wrapping up the first round of chemo and anticipating the beginning of the next round of chemo, that my husband was the first one to notice, actually. He said he felt like he was living with a different person. But that's kind of generic. The first really discreet episode that I had was I found myself standing in the bathroom, holding my toothbrush in my hand and freezing and saying, what do I do next? And that was very shocking. I didn't quite understand how to handle that. And that, you know, that really that was the stark first episode that I had.
Mm-hmm. And did things get progressively worse for you, Sue? You know, what else? You remember that incident. Tell me some of the other experiences. Was this kind of getting progressively worse? Were there multiple things that you were experiencing over time? Tell us a little bit more of some of the details.
I would not say that it got worse with time. Instead, I would say that it gets worse under stress, or if you have self expectations, anxiety, any of those things, any of those impact what it's like. At the beginning, I kept trying to get it all under control. I was having a hard time accepting the impaired Sue. I wanted the old me back. And no matter how hard I tried, the incidents kept piling up. There continue to be very discrete incidents. In my experience, I really cannot relate to the term fog, brain fog or chemo fog. That does not at all seem like what it is to me, because I recognize very discrete inabilities. For instance, even to this day, if I have a phone number and I need to enter it in my cell phone or call it, it is like 99.9% certain that I will not get all 10 numbers correct. Now, that sounds like an absurdity. If I tried harder, if I was more careful, I should be able to do it. I've learned that. Just go for it. You'll get it the second time. I usually miss the goal. I did this today. As I was getting ready, I thought, oh, soup would be good. I'm going to have some soup before I go and make the phone call. Went to the cupboard, opened the cupboard, and started arranging the items in the cupboard instead of trying to find soup. There wasn't any. Okay, so I went on. But it's minutes of time spent doing something completely different than what you came there for. I've lost auto recall, even trying to say, okay, and these are some of these incidents are common to everybody, and it's really a matter of how often they happen, how frequently. So I run into a lot of problems. I'll say to you, I can't recall the day, the date, the city. I might say Saginaw when I mean Sacramento or something like that. And I will get comments like, well, everybody does that. But it's very important that the person who's experiencing, like I am, these incidents knows what the former self was. I know what I was like. I know what kinds of snafus I would make. If I were to tell you that I forget my keys all the time, my brothers, my father, my mother, everybody would laugh hysterically. When I was growing up, my dad said to me, you'd lose the nose if it wasn't on your face. So I might lose keys, but I know that that's not different than the old Sue. So I really can't count that as a problem. Walking into a room and not knowing why I'm there at all, and just having to turn around and walk back out again, not doing it. Now, the most serious event that happened that really shook me and said, you know, you have got to pursue finding some kinds of management skills, if not treatment. This occurred when I was driving down a rather narrow street in the center of a New England town. Mm-hmm. And I looked down and I said, oh, you know, you have to be really careful because there's a double yellow line there. And I got distracted by the double yellow line and knocked my rear view mirror off and the parked car's rear view mirror, because I lost complete track of how close I was to the parked car. So I shifted my focus to something less relevant and lost my focus on something that was extremely relevant. And at that time, I wondered whether or not I would still be able to drive a car.
Yeah,
and that concerned me.
We're coming up on a break here, but
coping skills in order to be sure that it was okay to drive a car.
And,
so I guess
Sue,
that kind of rounds out the sorts of things that have happened, both immediately during the chemo process, and as I said this morning, this morning I went and opened the cupboard and started sorting things instead of getting my soup.
Yeah. So, Sue, let me ask you a quick question, because we're getting up to a first break here, but did you talk with your medical team about some of the challenges that you were having? And just quickly, what were some of the tools and suggestions that they gave you to manage some of this?
I mentioned it to my oncologist, and she said that I was upset about my diagnosis and that was the problem. Then later, when my husband came with me to my appointments and said, look, this is a problem, we have to deal with it, I was told that the first thing we needed to do was do a complete cognitive workup and get an analysis of what were my strengths and weaknesses. And honestly, I think that's like telling somebody that fell off a bike has a broken leg that we should find out whether or not you're a diabetic. That was just it didn't make sense. So I absolutely got nowhere with that. I can tell you now or after the break how it was that I came to connect with Dr. Meyer. I don't know how much time we have, so
We've got about a minute or two, Sue, so why don't you talk about that?
All right, okay. Well, that's more than enough. Then the rest was really accidental or providence or whatever you want to call it. I happened to notice a note on the door while I was during radiation, and it said that there would be a follow-up after cancer group session. And I went to that session. And, one was on nutrition and then something else. And then Dr. Meyer showed up for one of them. And that was how I got acquainted with her. And she was the one that really then pursued with me what were the options and followed up. But that was really not the first time that I heard the word chemo brain from somebody in the profession. Mm-hmm. There was a radiology nurse. I came in and she said, how are you doing? And I said, I'm having trouble trying to decide what car to buy and my husband's getting upset with me. And she said, you'd have trouble figuring out whether you wanted paper or plastic at the supermarket. You have chemo brain. Mm-hmm. And I laughed and I said, is that mm-hmm. really a word? I could not find any information out that was helpful. There was an old book that was written about it that said nobody understood it. And that was mm-hmm. about it. And until I happened to be at the right place at the right time, Dr. Meyer said, make an appointment. And mm-hmm. then from that point on, she helped me navigate through the various strategies, management strategies, and the treatments that I've used.
Well, that's great, Sue. Obviously a real relief to find Dr. Meyer, and we're gonna take a quick break here. Sue, I want to thank you for joining us for at least a portion of the show today and telling us a little bit about your experience. I know we're just getting started on the topic. We're gonna take a quick break here on Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're talking today about chemo brain, what it is, how it affects cancer patients, and some of the strategies to manage it. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, AZI, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit mealtrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's episode is being brought to you in part by Amgen Oncology and Lilly Oncology. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo, and we are now joined by Dr. Fremonto Meyer to talk about chemo brain. Dr. Meyer is a consultation psychiatrist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Brigham and Women's Hospital, and an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Her clinical work is primarily with cancer patients, particularly women with breast cancer. Her current research focuses on characterizing risk factors and interventions for fatigue, cognitive dysfunction, and depression in cancer patients. She's been involved in studies specifically pertaining to chemotherapy-associated cognitive dysfunction. Welcome to the show, Dr. Meyer.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Dr. Meyer, in a study that we looked at, 67% of patients reported experiencing memory and concentration problems during chemotherapy. These problems were still present 6 months after completing chemotherapy. You know, Sue's description of her experience with chemo brain raises so many questions. There's a lot that we want to get you here, but let's start by some basics. Medically speaking, what is chemo brain, Dr. Meyer?
Well, chemo brain is a lot of different names that people have proposed. Chemo fog is one that you mentioned. There's now a move to call it chemotherapy or even cancer-associated cognitive dysfunction because there is some people do find that they have similar symptoms after other forms of cancer treatment, surgery, radiation, even hormonal treatments. So it's a very broad phenomenon, but it certainly has, there certainly is a very large incidence of cognitive problems after chemotherapy. And I can talk a little bit more about the different types of cognitive problems that people experience. I think Sue really summed up some of the major symptoms in her description. I think one of the major things that people experience is difficulties sustaining their attention. So Sue described this idea of losing track of the original activity that she would start, you know, going into a cupboard and looking for soup and then rearranging the cupboard instead of looking for the soup. That's a very common example, difficulty sustaining attention or focus over a longer period of time. It almost resembles ADHD in a person who's never had that before. ADHD being attention deficit disorder. Other symptoms, difficulty finding words, often feeling that a word is on the tip of your tongue, but you just can't come up with it. Short-term memory problems, which can be linked again to this primary problem of being unable to sustain attention, because if you can't sustain attention, then it's also hard to remember things. Mm-hmm. And finally, higher-level cognitive issues, certainly examples like driving in a stressful situation when you're navigating a lot of traffic and having to make quick decisions about how to act, those things can be affected. we call it executive function, planning things, sequencing things, prioritizing different activities that you might have to do. Those can also be problems for people.
And what about that things that when Sue mentioned, you know, and again, we've all experienced it, but that word's right on the tip of your tongue, you know, just can't connect to it, can't find it. Is that a typical sort of symptom as well?
Absolutely. I think word retrieval is one of the most common things that my patients describe as being a problem.
And so, Dr. Meyer, so in the simplest terms possible, let's say you're you know, teaching middle school science, you know, that show, Am I Smarter Than a Sixth Grader? Can you explain to us just how the brain normally functions versus how it functions when patients are experiencing these symptoms of chemo brain? What's changing?
Well, I think the way I would like to explain it is using a metaphor. So if you think about a city and traffic in a city, you think about roads and bridges and connections. And normally in a good situation, there is a moderate amount of traffic, but not an excessive amount. Things aren't backed up. Things are moving along. You've got green lights everywhere if you look at a Google map. In chemo brain, what we think happens is that some of the there are probably decreases in the growth of cells in certain parts of the brain. So people have a temporary decrease in how many neurons that are growing in, say, their hippocampus, which is one of the parts of the brain controlling memory. So there are decreases in the numbers of cells, but more prominently, some of the connections between the cells. Neuronal cells have connective areas, connective tissue, and those connections get somewhat disrupted. The connections are not branching as well. They're not as efficient. So going back to our metaphor, almost what happens is that it's almost like you have a traffic jam in the brain. The roads aren't functioning well. You have accumulations of things at bridges. There's spots where things aren't functioning well, and basically you're not able to make the connections you're accustomed to making, which produces the symptoms that we talked about.
And do we see linkages with chemo brain with other difficulties or side effects that patients might experience from their treatment, maybe things like sleeplessness or things like anxiety? Or do we see any correlation between any of those other symptoms and side effects?
Certainly. I think there's a lot of association between insomnia and cognitive function. We've all had the experience of not sleeping well or having fragmented sleep and then having a tremendous difficulty with concentration the next day. So insomnia certainly is very, very common as a result of chemotherapy. Chemotherapy affects circadian rhythms, and so it certainly that can worsen any chemo brain that patients may be experiencing. The other issue is that anxiety, which is also really ubiquitous during cancer treatment, all the uncertainty, the side effects, the anxiety tends to worsen chemo brain in the sense that it makes people more aware of the symptoms, more troubled by them, less able to deploy the strategies that they might ordinarily use to manage them. So I think these symptom complexes are all linked.
And can you just go into a little bit more detail about what it is that causes chemo brain? I mean, is it actually caused by the chemotherapy itself? Can you have chemo brain if you have radiation or other forms of treatment, or is it actually the chemotherapy that's causing these side effects that we're describing?
Well, a lot of the interesting information comes from studies in animals, so I'm not able to give you as much data from humans, given that we don't have the opportunity to look at human brains while people are still alive in quite the same level of detail. But in animals, it's been shown that chemotherapy results in a decrease of cell growth in the hippocampus, one of the areas of the brain associated with forming new memories. It also appears that chemotherapy directly may decrease the number of connections, dendrites that neurons put out towards their neighbors, so resulting in some of the network problems that we talked about. So these have all been, you know, these studies have been done in rats and mice that received chemotherapy, and these changes were shown. So in terms of the other types of treatments, radiation therapy also can result in DNA damage, and these treatments, both chemo and radiation, are killing cancer cells, so it's not unreasonable to believe that they could have effects on healthy cells as well, as they do in for example, hair cells and skin cells, the other side effects that we see of chemotherapy. So radiation can cause DNA damage, and that would be brain radiation specifically. We don't think that generally radiation to other parts of the body has as large of an impact on cognition, but certainly could potentially have some. And then hormonal treatments, similar issues. The hormones are, estrogen is very active in the brain, actually, as just one example.
Mm. So I want to ask you, I'm sure many of our listeners are thinking about this question, but how do you know if someone's suffering from chemo brain versus another condition like dementia or even Alzheimer's?
Right. So actually, I see a lot of patients in my clinic, which I run at Dana-Farber, people who may be worried about this, who wonder if they have chemo brain or something more sinister. And I find that it's actually, even with cognitive screening tests, Sue had briefly mentioned having some of those tests, and there are also more detailed batteries of tests called neuropsychological testing that can give us a lot of insight. I usually find that with a combination of screening tests, talking to the patient about what they're experiencing and doing a more comprehensive group of cognitive tests, that there are patterns that are very different in chemo brain versus a condition like dementia. So ordinarily in patients with Alzheimer's, they have trouble with making memories in addition to, retrieving memories. Mm-hmm. So if I give them four words to remember, and then I give them cues, they won't remember the words, and cues won't help them at all because they weren't able to encode those words to put in their memory bank. If I give the same test to someone with chemo brain, they might not get the words when I ask them to remember the words 5 minutes later, but if I give them clues about what the words might be, they often can get them with those clues, and that's because they still can retrieve, and they were able to, put the words originally into their memory bank, but just had trouble retrieving them.
So is there a specific type of test that you administer to someone who thinks they're experiencing chemo brain?
So there are screening tests. I do the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. It's available online, and it's basically a 5 to 7 minute screening test. It actually often gives me a decent idea, but often a fuller neuropsychological testing battery that can take anywhere from 1 to 3 hours, depending on the length of the battery. I send my patients often to see a neuropsychologist to have that done, and they'll do more detailed tests of memory to look at these issues of encoding and retrieval, like we talked about.
And just quickly, when you say test, do you mean like a test where you're writing something on paper or on the computer, or are you talking about tests like medical tests?
So it's generally a combination of writing tests, perhaps drawing pictures, perhaps reading stories and interpreting them and being asked to remember details of the stories later. It's a combination of different types of things, but it wouldn't typically involve any laboratory test or blood work.
Okay. So just to clarify, when we're talking about those kinds of screenings and tests and assessments, I think people like to, understand specifically, what it is that we're talking about. We are talking on the show today about chemo brain. We're talking with Dr. Fremonta Meyer, who is a consultation psychiatrist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. We're talking about chemo brain. We're talking about the signs and symptoms of it, the assessments for it. We're going to get a little bit into some more medical questions with Dr. Meyer, and also talk a little bit more about some of the things that patients can do as they're recovering from treatment and some of the tools that are available to them. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around 2 pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive 1 delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals@home.com or call 617-733-5848.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Onyx Pharmaceuticals, an Amgen subsidiary, and Bristol-Myers Squibb. I'm Kim Tibaldo, and today we're talking about chemo brain. A study has shown that 60% of patients experience impaired memory and concentration even 6 months after chemotherapy, radiation, or both. Dr. Fremonta Meyer is with us today to help us understand chemo brain and some of the strategies that are available to cope with it. Dr. Meyer is a consultation psychiatrist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Brigham and Women's Hospital, and an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Her clinical work is primarily with cancer patients, particularly women with breast cancer. Dr. Meyer, I was encouraged by the number of options that patients have to help alleviate the symptoms of chemo brain. Can you tell us, we talked a little bit in the previous segment about what chemo brain is, about some of the assessments that are available to make sure we're diagnosing it correctly. Now, can you tell us a little bit about some of the coping strategies and tools that are out there that you recommend and use with your patients?
So before we get to the coping strategies, I just want to highlight the importance of really having a good medical assessment. If you're, if you're someone who's watching this, listening to this show and wondering, I'm having chemo brain and it hasn't gone away. It's been six or more months since chemotherapy. I'm still struggling. I think the first thing to do is you just want to make sure you talk to your oncologist and or your other physicians about it and ask them about to look at any medical causes that could be contributing. So I often recommend some basic blood work, things like checking thyroid, certain vitamin levels. All those things can contribute as well to cognitive dysfunction, and they're easily treatable. So blood work, considering other conditions like insomnia, like we talked about, sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is very common after cancer treatment. And just to make sure that your physical health is where it needs to be, sort of before moving forward with, I think you want to make sure that chemo brain is what you're really looking at.
I think that's really important advice that we're making sure we're getting the, you know, patients are talking about this, they're asking about this. I think it's important that patients feel empowered to talk about this and ask about this. And also, you know, as we were saying earlier, I'm sure, you know, we know that the majority of people who are diagnosed with cancer are older in age. You know, age is a great risk factor for cancer. So I imagine that some of the things we talked about in the earlier segment, dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, these are things that could certainly be concerning to patients as they're facing this. So I think it's great that you're reinforcing that. You've got to talk to your doctor, ask what tools are out there, what assessments are out there. Know that this is something that many patients experience, and really you have to be an empowered patient to get the right tools and assessments and find out what's going on and really make a plan.
Absolutely. And as a psychiatrist, I also have to say that chemo brain can contribute to a lot of depression and anxiety. And it's really important to push past that stigma of getting help for the anxiety you may be experiencing due to your chemo brain symptoms and have that treated as well. There's evidence that certain antidepressants can actually improve some of the problems with neurons and connections in the brain that we talked about earlier. So it's important to do whatever you can to treat what's treatable in addition to the chemo brain.
So let's go into some of the tools and the coping strategies.
Yeah. So I think the coping strategies are, a lot of them are things that I recommend in general for people who have survived cancer. I think some of the recommendations that you're going to get from your oncologist are likely to exercise regularly. There's evidence that exercise, particularly aerobic exercise, increases blood flow in the frontal lobes of the brain. That's exactly the part of the brain that's affected when you have trouble sustaining your attention. So aerobic exercise is always a good idea. And in fact, there was also a study recently that I was looking at on resistance strength training, and they actually found that some patients experienced improvement in chemo brain symptoms after doing a regimen of strength training, which they started during chemotherapy. So I think all types of exercise can be very beneficial. Training your brain in meditation mindfulness helps you sustain attention, so it may actually deal with one of the core things that you're experiencing. There are a lot of programs for cancer survivors and mindfulness. Sometimes it's, if you look in your local area or go to your local cancer support community, they'll have those types of resources. So I always recommend mindfulness training to my patients. And then the other things, Sue didn't have a, I know Sue would want me to mention this, Sue has found acupuncture very beneficial, and acupuncture may actually also improve sustained attention. It's been shown to improve cognitive function in a few studies, so acupuncture is as an option. And then I was involved in a study out of Cleveland, the Cleveland Clinic and other co-investigators in Cleveland, Ohio, on EEG biofeedback or neurofeedback, and it's essentially a guided treatment in which you're hooked up to an EEG machine, which essentially measures the electrical activity of your brain, and you basically listen to soothing music while on this machine, and the music will pause intermittently when the computer software detects that you have turbulent electrical activity in your brain, which may be associated with cognitive failures. And the music will stop until your brain will be kind of encouraged to reset it on its own. It's sort of a way to train your brain to be able to keep the relaxing music going. And it's in our study, we actually showed this is a study that we did in breast cancer survivors who were experiencing cognitive problems anywhere from 6 months to 5 years after completing chemotherapy. And we found that these women actually experienced a huge improvement in their cognitive symptoms, their sleep and their anxiety after doing this for 10 weeks, a couple times a week, and that these improvements were actually sustained even after the end of the study. So that EEG biofeedback, neurofeedback is an option that you might consider looking into if other things have not been helpful for you. So there are a lot of things that you can do. I think that the important message here is not to give up hope.
Right. And you talked about exercise, Dr. Meyer. We had an exercise physiologist on the show not long ago, and one of the things that he was saying was that, you know, a lot of times, obviously, cancer patients are going through treatment, they're feeling fatigued, but he said, you know, even the most minimal or mild of exercise can certainly have a clinical benefit. Would you find that that's the same when it comes to chemo brain, that even a modest amount of activity may lead to some improvements?
Absolutely. I think there's always the higher the dose of exercise, the better you're going to do. But I think even if you can only do a small amount, that tends to be helpful as well.
Are there pharmaceutical options available to patients to help with this?
Absolutely. The research studies have not been as favorable regarding the usefulness of medications. However, I certainly use medications in my clinic. Like I mentioned earlier, it's very important to treat any associated depression or anxiety or fatigue. And there are patients that do very well with ADHD medications like methylphenidate or Ritalin, Adderall, or the amphetamines. Those medications can help to activate the frontal lobes of the brain and help patients to sustain attention and also help with fatigue. So I certainly have used those medications. Another type of medication that can be helpful is modafinil or Provigil, which has been used, it's FDA approved for treating fatigue in people with sleep apnea and other conditions. And so I've used that for kind of fatigue and attention as well. And it has been studied in breast cancer patients with some positive effects.
Mm, okay. All right. And Dr. Rai, you also believe that social connections are extremely important. Tell us about that.
Well, I think one of the ways that social connections are helpful is that they, I think chemo brain can be very isolating when you're having trouble paying attention, when you're having trouble articulating yourself, finding the right words for things. It's easy to withdraw into yourself, and that tends to just worsen the problem because you then lose the skills that you have in terms of communicating, getting your point across. Practice really helps. So I think keeping social networks broad is extremely important. You know, in other people, it's been shown to reduce the risk of developing dementia. So from that you can extend that to helping with other people with other types of cognitive problems like chemo brain. So I think pushing yourself, you know, really pushing yourself to get out there, to interact with people, like to try to get past the fears of saying the wrong word, to try to laugh at yourself. I think that's all really important.
Probably good advice for life, yes.
Exactly.
Dr. Meyer, we've only got a couple quick minutes until our break here, but you run a clinic for patients dealing with chemo brain. Can you tell us about your clinic and the patients that you're serving?
Well, I see a lot of breast cancer patients, which is consistent with the research that breast cancer patients do seem to experience chemo brain at pretty high rates. But I also see people with all different types of cancer, including people who have had cancers that more directly affect the brain, brain tumors, people that have had treatments directly involving their brain. And it also seems that there are other types of cancer, certainly leukemia, lymphoma, colon, and other GI cancers, people who have had chemo, which causes similar symptoms to the breast cancer patients I see. And I tend to just do a really complete evaluation. I work very closely with neuropsychologists to help me understand better that person's individual cognitive profile, their strengths, their weaknesses, what we can really exploit in terms of what they're already able to do really well, because that's important to develop a treatment plan. And then we also look at any of those medical things, those pesky medical things that we might need to treat along with the chemo brain. So that's kind of, we start out with that assessment approach, and then we develop an individualized plan for people on that basis.
And we've only got less than a minute till our break here, but so you're obviously in a center that's a big NCI cancer center. You're in a big city. What does somebody do if they're in a smaller community? How do they get this looked at?
Right. I think it's hard, and I can imagine people listening to this show feeling really alone, like they don't have the access, this type of access to resources. I think one thing that might be that is worthwhile is to look at some of the treatments that I mentioned, like mindfulness. There actually are online programs where you can do it from your home and kind of gain. And they have been shown to work just as well as in-person mindfulness training. And then it may be that there are sometimes if you just simply talk to your oncologist, if they have national connections, they can kind of put you in touch with people who are engaged in this work around the country.
Yeah. Terrific. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're talking about chemo brain. We've got a lot more to talk about with Dr. Meyer. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope. And help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The cancer support community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company. I'm Kim Tibaldo, and we're having a great conversation with psychiatrist Dr. Fremonto Meyer, whose clinical work is primarily with cancer patients. Dr. Meyer, what led you to be interested in women's cancers and cognitive function in cancer survivors?
Well, I completed my fellowship at Dana-Farber, which was a psychiatry fellowship with a specialization in doing psychiatry work in oncology patients. And after I finished my fellowship, I was hired to work with breast cancer patients. And as soon as I started doing that, I realized that the cognitive complaints that they had were just not really being addressed anywhere else. And I had always been interested in cognition, actually. I considered becoming a neurologist and always had an interest in mind-brain interactions and thinking about how psychiatric conditions like affect cognition and memory. And so it really dovetailed well with my previous interests. So I was really excited to start, helping with people with something they were very much, not getting the attention they wanted for.
And do you see the standard of care changing or the conversation shifting where doctors are talking more with patients about chemo brain as a side effect, the way they talk about, hair loss and nausea and fatigue and the other sort of symptoms and side effects of cancer and its treatment?
I've seen a really encouraging shift, actually, in the last 5 to 6 years. I finished my fellowship in 2009 and had met Sue around that time. Actually, I think I met her during my fellowship. And during that time, I think it was not being addressed to the extent that it is now. In the last 5 years, a lot of studies have coming out documenting that people who have had cancer and who have had chemotherapy, their brains work differently. They have different blood flow patterns in their brains that actually correlate with their cognitive symptoms. And so I think oncologists are becoming more and more aware that this is a real thing. And so it comes up more than it used to. And I think that's a really encouraging development. I think mm-hmm. what's still hard is that we do not yet have any FDA-approved treatments for chemo brain. Mm-hmm. And it's also hard to know. I think oncologists are very accustomed to thinking about survival, and they want their patients to survive, and they have this mm-hmm. very clear endpoint when they do research. I'm trying mm-hmm. to make sure my patient lives, and I want to see how long. That's a very clear goal. Whereas I think with chemo brain, people wonder what the endpoint should it be. Should mm-hmm. we be looking at like what patients report about their cognition? Should we look at these objective tests where we give people paper and pencil tests? Should we look at MRIs of people's brains and how the blood flow is? What's our endpoint? And I think that's been hard. I think that's been harder for oncologists to wrap their minds mm-hmm. around how to deal with that.
Well, yes, and we certainly know that survival piece is critical, but certainly patients tell us day in and day out how important quality of life is to them. It's not just about quantity of life, but quality of life and what their life is like during that, survival, however long it may be. What do we know, Dr. Meyer, about, I'm sure it varies from patient to patient, but on average, how long does chemo brain last? Do the symptoms start to go away after chemo has ended? Do things get back to normal, or is there just a long-term adjustment that patients have?
Well, I think a lot of patients, this is the good news, the vast majority of patients are going to have a gradual improvement in their chemo brain symptoms after treatment, and I would say a lot of people are feeling considerably better about 9 months out, maybe sooner, you know, from the end of their chemotherapy and radiation. And this is assuming, and there are people, of course, who are in chemotherapy for longer periods of time, and I think that that clock of getting better starts when you're able to stop chemotherapy. There is a smaller proportion of people. It's hard to put a number on it exactly, but it may be somewhere around 10% of people that have longer-term effects over the course of years.
It's got to be incredibly challenging when folks are dealing with that for over a longer period of time. As we get towards the end of the show, Dr. Meyer, what are some of the questions that you would like answered? What are things that you wish we better understood about ChemoBrain?
Well, I have so many questions, and I'm delighted that there's so much research going on in this area. I think the big question that I would like to have answered, and I think it could be very relevant for decision-making in a number of cancer types, is how can we identify someone who's at risk for ChemoBrain? What genetic markers may identify an at-risk person? And in that person, if there is any some people may need to go ahead with chemotherapy regardless of this. Are there any, for those people, what can we do to prevent ChemoBrain from developing? Are there any early interventions that we can do? Or alternately, could it change the discussion with the oncologist about chemotherapy in someone where chemotherapy was known to have this high risk of causing longer-term cognitive issues? That could become part of the discussion about whether to proceed with it. So I think I really would like to know more about the genetic risk factors, and that work is ongoing. And I'm hoping that if we do this call again in 5 years, we'll have more answers about that.
Well, that's a date. We will absolutely do that, and maybe sooner than 5 years. I know we talked a little bit about, we've only got a couple minutes left here, but I know we talked about exercise. Any research happening about diet, about nutrition and brain function, ChemoBrain?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not aware of any large studies recently, yeah. But I think that it makes sense. I actually think this is another thing that we're going to learn a lot more about in the next 10 years about diet and cognition. There are resources that you can look at online that will give you some ideas for particular foods that may boost cognition. The list is probably too long to go over now, but I think it's another area of investigation that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, and I just imagine that, you know, a lot of those superfoods that we read about, and you know, I know if you just do a search on good foods for the brain, there's a lot of good information out there. We're almost out of time, Dr. Meyer, but what do you think, one or two of the most important things that patients and their loved ones need to think about or know about ChemoBrain if they're starting treatment?
I think the most important things are keep the big picture in mind. People can't have ChemoBrain if they don't survive. So you have to have ChemoBrain, you have to be alive. So I think keeping the big picture in mind around that is really important. The other thing is that to know that it will, in most people, it is going to get better, and be patient with yourself. You know, it's not necessarily going to get better immediately after chemotherapy, but that fog or those incidents, like Sue described, those are going to get better gradually over the course of a year after treatment. So be patient with yourself, and hopefully for any family members who are listening, for them to be patient too, and to understand this is real.
Yes.
And then for those people who are still struggling farther out, there are things that you can do to manage your symptoms. You can come up with an action plan. You can self-manage, and you can benefit from, you know, people who have come before you in terms of managing this over a longer term, people like Sue and others that I've worked with. So I think I just want to leave everyone with a hopeful message that that doesn't have to be the end of your brain in a way, and that you can really access strength as well.
Right. And you know, as you said, many patients do find that they have some form of recovery or improvement after their treatment has ended, which we've certainly heard from many patients. Dr. Meyer, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and shedding light on this important and complex subject, and thank you for the work that you're doing with patients in your community. I want to remind folks that at the Cancer Support Community, we have a host of free resources available to people with cancer, people with all cancers at any stage of their illness, and also for the families and loved ones of people with cancer. We have our wonderful centers around the country where we do support groups, education, nutrition, exercise, stress reduction. We have a really vibrant community online and also a helpline where you could pick up the phone right now and talk to one of our counselors. That number is 888-793-9355. Again, if you're grabbing a pen, call us at 888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, be well. Do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.